Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:18 PM, that is Central Time. Today is December 3rd, and today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio and video for the various different asset classes. Well, the yield curve spread has pulled back in a pretty dynamic manner this week. It's down 25 basis points. So that's a big move. And it is respective of, or I get reflective, I should say, of a significant contraction in longer-dated yields. So we've had announcements from the Federal Reserve talking about the fact that they anticipate accelerating the pace of the taper and being done perhaps by the end of the first quarter. And after that, they might start thinking about raising rates. And the market is pricing in the potential now that they'll raise rates 3 times next year. So that's certainly something that we need to pay attention to. After a 75 basis point contraction over the course of little more than about 3 or 4 months, well, then this is pointing towards a significant tightening next year. And we can then think about, what do we normally anticipate? Well, at the beginning of a new tightening cycle, when the market starts to pull back, it's usually because the economy is recovering. And we do have evidence that the U.S. economy has recovered. So unemployment is down into the 4% handle, and the unemployment rate is one portion of it. Labor force participation is another, and that's going to be slower to recover. And there's still lots of jobs available. So there will be a push-pull factor in trying to get people back into work, and what kind of benefit and salary package is going to encourage people. But then we also have the bigger questions here, and it's about liquidity. So the Federal Reserve seems to be intent to taper their assistance and begin to raise rates. And we know that, generally speaking, by the time we get to 75 basis points on the downside, well, let's just go back and think about what happened in 2017 and 18. Back in 2018, the Federal Reserve had been raising rates. And then the Jay Powell got his new job, and the market pulled back by 10%. They persisted with their quantitative tightening, and the market pulled back by 20% at the end of 18. And in 2019, they started cutting interest rates. Then the high yield market seized up in the summer, and then the repo market seized up in September, and they had to inject $450 billion overnight to ensure liquidity in that market. So that by the time we came around to 2020, and of course we had the inverted yield curve in 2019, and it was only very marginal on the 10-year and the 2-year. If we look at the 10-year and the 3-month, well then, we get a different chart, because it was sharply inverted in 2019. And it is now starting to also pull back here as well. So it's looking increasingly likely that this level is the peak for the 10-year minus the 3-month. Now, when we think about the overall market environment, well, we've had a very significant increase in prices for unprofitable companies, and we've been sold those types of companies based upon the argument that they're highly innovative, that they're going to change the world, and that they represent the front edge of a technological frontier. So the ARK Innovation ETF went up like a rocket in 2020, and went up by 400%, and all the way up to the peak in early this year, and then it pulled back extremely sharply, and it's been going sideways since, and then it broke down again this in here this week. So massive first the acceleration, then the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, period of right hand extension, and now it's breaking downwards again. So we have a type 1-2 top formation with right hand extension, and this looks like a completing top formation again. And this is a direct response to liquidity, because if it were really about the kind of response that we had, for example, from these types of shares during the pandemic, well, obviously there was people worried about the coronavirus in 2020, and then there was a massive monetary response. And people are worried about the Omicron variant right now because it's looking to be really very transmissible. And the number of cases in South Africa has gone up by 4 times this week. So that's a significant acceleration. And there's the potential that the same thing will happen around the world. And we're starting to see more cases popping up in lots of different locations. So it's gone global in a very short period of time as well. So there is really the potential that we're going to have some difficulties with it, and nobody is really sure yet just whether it's going to be a mild suite of symptoms, or will the symptoms' severity decline in direct correlation with how quickly the virus is transmissible, or will there be an interval between the two? That's a big uncertainty, and we have not had an official response to it yet. Instead, the Federal Reserve is talking about tapering quicker and raising interest rates, and because these companies don't make money, they have lots of promises and really exciting presentations about what they can do in the future. But ultimately, it comes down to money in the now, and they don't have any. And if interest rates rise and availability of liquidity starts to dry up, well, then they're going to run into trouble. So the total assets of central banks surged higher in 2020, and it went up by about 50%. And I think that's, and I'm going to put this on a log scale chart, and we'll see, I think, something that's rather important. Because during crises, and we had a big crisis in 2008, and we had another big crisis in 2020, the total assets of central banks went up by about 50% on both occasions. So it went from about 7 to 10, and then it went from about 20 to 30. And during the recovery from the crises, the stock markets doubled. And then we can see that the pace of the advance moderated, and there were occasions where it didn't really go anywhere. So it pretty much stopped rising in 2010, and we had a pretty range-bound stock market. And then it also kind of went sideways in 2012, and we had and into 13, and we also had a flat stock market. And then also in 2014-15, and in 2018 and into 19. So, in fact, in 2018 and 19, we had quantitative tightening. So, not only did it go sideways, it went down. And that was contributing to some of the stresses that had been present in 2018 and 19 that I discussed already. So, as we think then about what's going to happen next, well, the pace of the advance has undoubtedly started to moderate. And it's still rising, but it's not rising quickly. And other central banks around the world, other than the Federal Reserve, are already in interest rate hiking territory. And they're not as engaged with quantitative easing as they were before. And then, of course, one of the reasons why it's interesting to look at those yield curve spreads is that if this is the peak, it's way below where peaks were before. So this is a different cycle than we've had on repeated occasions over the course of the last 30 years. Because of the mathematical impossibility of creating a 300 basis point differential between the long and the short end of the curve. So it looks quite likely that this cycle will be shorter than the last. Now, obviously, the last cycle was the longest economic expansion in the post-war era. So making a prediction that this expansion isn't going to be as long as that isn't an especially ambitious forecast. But the reality is that if the yield curve spread becomes inverted, it's a lead indicator for a future recession. Now, when we look at some of the individual constituents of those highly publicized and innovation ETFs, well, we're going to see that there's a lot of companies that don't make money and that are trading on extravagant valuations. Tesla is a major constituent of the ARK Innovation ETF, and it represents about 10% of the portfolio. But Teladoc, Coinbase, Roku, Zoom Media, these are all representative of this kind of environment. Now, you might argue that Tesla has made profits, and that's true, but it's trading on an extravagant valuation, and the share price is pulling back from the $1,200 area, and it's looking quite overbought in the short term. So it could easily pull back by another $200, and then it would only be approximating the region of the 200-day moving average. The pink line in this chart is the 1,000-day moving average, and it's at a fraction of where the price is right now. Then, one thing that I think is particularly relevant here is Apple has told the market just in the last couple of days that demand for its products is waning. And the share was up strong on Wednesday, and then it bounced off its lows yesterday, and the price was down a bit in here today. Well, the price right now is around $160. And if we look at the put options, at just in the money put options, they're asking about $4.60. And that option was up nearly $2 today, and it's still cheap. Now, of course, you're only getting 2 weeks of protection, but these options are cheap. If one were to buy puts on Tesla, one would be paying a lot more for it. So obviously, investors aren't worried about some of these bigger companies. They're not bidding up the puts. It doesn't mean that they can't, and these puts are cheap, so somebody's going to start looking at these things. But the reality is that when we think about the performance of the very large cap companies, well, they're still performing reasonably well. Now, it does not mean that they can't pull back. And when we combine their market caps, they're still in the order of about 11.5 trillion. Now, it could easily pull back. And it's been a very consistent trend on the upside over the course of this year. So it's not even an equal-sized reaction just yet. But ultimately, if it pulls back below the 200-day moving average and it sustains that move, well, then we're going to be in a very different price environment. Now let's think about the wider NASDAQ, where those FAANG man companies have significant weightings. The consistency of the trend up from the lows in March has been rivetingly clear. So we have a sequence of ranges one above another, and each one of those ranges is relatively similar sized. And we've just had another breakout, and in the course of this uptrend off the lows in 2020, then each of the breakouts has been sustained. So now the index, it posted a downside key reversal last week. And then it followed through on the downside this week, and it's closing out the week right in the region of the previous peak. So if it's going to find support, then now is the time. If a deeper process and a lengthier process of consolidations is to be avoided, it will rally on Monday, and it will hold the breakout. If the trend becomes less consistent, well, then that is indicative of supply and demand no longer being in balance and starting to come back into balance. And that's not particularly comforting when a price is up in such a strong manner over a comparatively short period of time. So we're at a key point for some of these major indices. Now, when we think about the IPO, just think first about the performance of companies that are in that ARK Innovation ETF. And then look at the IPO ETF, and it has a very similar pattern where it had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and now it's breaking downwards. And then let's just look at some of the individual components of some of these fintech ETFs as well. So Square has rolled over and is breaking downwards. One of the big mortgage lenders like LendingTree has been trending downwards all year. Then we have companies like Visa. Well, Visa has had some difficulty because they've or Amazon is trying to squeeze their margins by telling them that they can't or they will not accept Visa cards in the UK Amazon store any longer. But and if that were if it were just Visa, then we could say it's an individual company, but it's not because MasterCard has also pulled back in a sharp manner, and lots of these fintech companies are doing poorly. And of course, they're not especially profitable. Whereas when we look at the S&P 500 banks index, well, a lot of the investment banks are in this index. Now, they still have a ways to go before they come back to the region of the 200-day moving average. But they're not breaking downwards, and they don't have the same kinds of patterns that the fintech type companies have. Then, whoops, I should have pressed the wrong button there. The KBW Regional Banks Index, it's quite different from the S&P 500 Banks Index. If we think about a company like JP Morgan, consumer banking is only about 18% of their business, whereas for the regional banks, it's all of their business. And these fintech companies, they've built up franchises, and they get lots of hits and lots of people opening their apps because of their low fees, because of the marketing that they go through, but they don't have the cash flows to back it up. Whereas when we look at these regional banks, they're very consumer focused. And if there were a problem with the consumer, then these banks would be underperforming. So we've had a pullback over the course of the last few weeks, but it's in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's not breaking downwards. Well, what that suggests is that this is much more about interest rates and the outlook for liquidity than any other factor. Now, when we then think about this question of unprofitable companies, well, the feedback loop potentially is that it comes to companies. Let's just think, for example, about Microsoft. So Microsoft has invested heavily in its data centers. And lots of those new companies, they don't build their own infrastructure, they rent it. So they're renting rack space from companies like Microsoft, which has had a downside queue reversal last week and followed through in the downside this week. And there is no question to the fact that it accelerated higher. So there is the clear scope that we're going to move into a deeper, lengthier process of consolidation. It's also worth considering that the 200-day moving average is not all that far away, and the 100-day moving average is a lot closer to the price. But the 1,000-day moving average generally offers support during the big pullbacks, and it's been an awfully long time since shares like Microsoft came anywhere close to the 1,000-day moving average. When we think then about the S&P 500, which is obviously a more diversified index than the Nasdaq 100, well, it's also pulling back and testing the region of the upper side of the underlying range. And the ranges have been less well defined, but they're still present. And the 200-day moving average is around 200 points below where the price is right now. It's coinciding right now with the region of the 100-day moving average, which has offered support on numerous occasions over the last year. So it is still possible that this bull market can be saved. And when I talk about a bull market, I'm really talking more about the trend up off the lows since 2020. So it's almost a 2-year uptrend. And it's been particularly consistent. So if that consistency holds and we get rebounds next week, well, then we're still in a benign environment. But If it doesn't, and we pull back into the range and we go back to test the region of the 200-day moving average, well, then we're looking at less consistency. Less consistency means more risks, and more risks means position sizes need to be contained. So obviously we're in a rather taut environment. Now, when we think about central bank balance sheets, they have moderated. And then we can think about the dollar. And the dollar index has been pushing higher. And a good part of the reason for its relative strength this week has been because of safe haven buying. But as long as the dollar is pushing higher, well, then it acts as a headwind for the emerging markets. But one of the other big headwinds for emerging markets would be energy prices. And oil came back in a violent manner this week and failed to push back above the 200-day moving average today. So we're still in a negative environment for oil. Now, OPEC does not want oil prices below $60. And $60 is a comfortable level for large numbers of unconventional suppliers. At the same time, they don't want to see $6 gas in the USA. So they're willing to play ball with the USA in order to contain prices if they go above $80. So this band between $60 and $80 is what could be deemed as comfortable from the perspective of investors and from the perspective of the producers. And then we're starting to see that the natural gas price in Europe is starting to come back down. And that will help to mitigate some of the inflationary pressures. So natural gas today was down about £13, and coming back from that $250, or excuse me, pound area, US natural gas prices have pulled back violently, and it makes perfect sense that there will be increasing demand for exports from North America to Europe to capture this differential. So the Baltic Dry Index has started to recover, and the Breakwave Dry Bulk Shipping ETF has rebounded ahead of that event. So it's certainly doing better in here today. But what this also helps to highlight is that during times of stress, some of the markets that had pulled back earlier are starting to find support, and those that are most acutely impacted by higher interest rates, well, then they're going to be hit hardest. Whereas shipping is more of a concrete type of business. It's less influenced by the vagaries of global liquidity. And copper prices have been quite volatile over the course of the last week, but they are continuing to hold the region of the trend mean. So as we think about what the solutions to these problems will be, it's reasonable to anticipate that there will be more infrastructure development. Of course, the big wild card is about what happens in China, because the renminbi has been particularly strong. So they're certainly attempting to send out a signal with a strong currency to say that there's nothing to see here. And then when we think about Asia high yield, well, high yield bonds in Asia are ramping higher. And we definitely have a, or the, excuse me, the spread is of high yield bonds in China is ramping higher. The bonds themselves are trending lower. So we have this clear downward trend overall. And it's way below both the 200 and the 1,000-day moving averages. And we had a bounce for a couple of weeks, and now it's starting to roll over again. And there is increasing pressure coming to bear on the Chinese property developers. So it remains to be seen what will the Chinese government do. Now, they have certainly been making some effort to try and provide additional liquidity, and they've begun to remove some of the restrictions on land sales. So those are positive developments in the Chinese market. The big question is, are they going to continue with those? And what is it that they're going to do? Because historically, there has been this very cozy relationship between the property developers and the local governments and the banks. And the banks would make liquidity available to the property developers. The property developers would give the money to the municipals, and the municipalities would then have the funding to fund their operations. And that happy set of circumstances, it allowed massive debt piles to accumulate with the property developers, and they become extremely levered. So China doesn't want to go back to that kind of situation, and they don't have the political wherewithal to impose a property tax either. So they're going to attempt to ensure that a lot of these companies don't go bust without causing even further bubbly activity later. It means that we're going to be going through a managed process of defaults. Some of these companies will have to default, and others will be saved, and or at least the denouement of bankruptcy will be put off and delayed interminably until eventually the economy is in a healthy enough position to try and allow these kinds of events to occur. Of course, China is still running a zero COVID policy, which has a significant knock-on effect for the wider economy and the global economy for that matter. And they're contending with slower growth overall, so they do have a rationale for a weaker currency, lower interest rates, and so far the currency has been particularly inert. So that's clear evidence that they've pegged it to the dollar. And this is obviously something that we need to pay attention to, because it's not only that the property market is experiencing trouble. It's also that there's the geopolitical tensions that are rising, and the calls in the USA for Chinese companies to open up their books to investors, and also to conform to GAAP accounting standards. So Alibaba has pulled back in a very violent manner over the last 2 weeks. It's well below the lows that preceded that upside Q reversal 2 months ago, and it is now even more oversold than it was back then. So it's looking cheap. The price is today where it was in 2017, but we still have the uncertainty about what's going to happen in terms of China's companies being listed in the USA, because if they have to conform to US accounting standards, well, then that's going to be uncomfortable. If they have to relist in Hong Kong and delist from the USA, that's going to be equally uncomfortable. So that is weighing on the Chinese companies. And they were among the leading decliners on the NASDAQ in here today, because a significant number of these Chinese companies are listed on the NASDAQ 100. So that was an additional contributing factor to the weakness that we've seen coming through. Now, the credit impulse in China is at a level where it should start to turn higher, and we just haven't seen a lot of action yet. It looks increasingly likely that there will be action to try and arrest the decline in the property sector. But they probably want to let it go for a while longer before they move in and act in an aggressive manner. Now, when we think about the longer term, well, we know that there are some liquidity issues because of what's happening with the Fed and what's happening with China. And we know that some of the best performing sectors, like the innovation sector, have been doing spectacularly well and are rolling over. and they are the most acutely affected by the loss of the wall of liquidity. And of course, we have the fact that the 10-year Treasury yield has contracted in a meaningful fashion over the course of the last 2 weeks. So it is closing now below the 140 level in here today. So it has broken down from this range that's been forming for 2 months, and there's the potential that it is going to contract further. Well, what this is beginning to suggest is that investors are, or these bond investors, are a lot less worried about inflation than deflation. I personally think that inflationary figures are going to surprise on the downside next year, because a number of the factors that have contributed to higher prices are going to be mitigated. One of the most important is used cars. So there are lots of people who would normally lease their vehicles, and they haven't been able to trade them back in because there just aren't the new cars to be given out to them. So they're holding on to their leases, and of course that's withdrawing supply from the market. Well, when you listen to companies like Volkswagen and Toyota, and they say that the semiconductor shortage will have ended by the end of next year, or the, excuse me, the end of the second quarter next year, well, that suggests that at the there'll be more cars available. Lots of people who have leases will be able to trade them in. That means there'll be greater supply of used vehicles, and the price of used vehicles can actually start to come down. And that will create an inflationary feedback loop. Then, of course, there's the potential that rents will pop on the upside, which would be inflationary. And there is the potential then that we'll have some defaults starting to come through, because the forbearance will have run out, and some people will be able to catch up with their mortgages and with their rent payments, and others won't. So that would be deflationary. And of course, oil prices are starting to come back down again, which will start to look less inflationary on a year-over-year basis. So there is certainly potential that inflation is going to start to moderate. Of course, what central banks have clearly said is that they want to see a trend. And we're in an environment, particularly from a geopolitical perspective, where people are sick to death of quantitative tightening or fiscal austerity, and they're just not going to accept it any longer. And since that's the case, then it's going to be very difficult to raise rates. And it would be difficult if that were the only reason. But then we have the significant knock-on effect to the cost of servicing all of the debt from higher yields. And governments are just not in a position to be able to raise taxes or cut services. So that's inflationary overall. So we're likely to see that inflationary pressures will moderate in the first half and then probably pick up again in the second half. So that would also contribute to a trending environment for inflation, where we get higher lows. And the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is starting to come back down, and Nvidia is back in the region of the lower side of its range. Now, it's so far held on to all of the advance, but it's another one of these companies that has done spectacularly well because of the low interest rate environment, and lots of people with lots of cash willing to pay over the odds to capture one of their graphics cards. With liquidity ebbing, then that could have a knock-on effect. I've been looking at delinquency rates, and I think most particularly for credit cards over the course of 30 days. And it's still in the region of the lows, and we still have a lot of demand for credit cards. But when we think about some of the companies that are engaged in the buy now, pay later movement, like Affirm, well, they're trending lower. So I think this is worth watching because a lot of young people, they don't have direct access to credit cards. So some of their first experience with credit has been through these buy now, pay later services, which charge exorbitant fees on the back end if one misses a payment or is late with a payment. The fact that they're trending downwards is obviously a reflection of the tightening liquidity conditions, but also of their unprofitable position. And if they start to falter, well, it's going to be particularly relevant to pay attention to what they say in terms of their earnings, because the major credit card companies seem to be doing fine, and large numbers of consumers have got certainly improved financial conditions over the course of the last year. But the most vulnerable people will have gone for these basically layaway programs, and if they start to report negative earnings and slower growth, then that's going to be representative of tightness in the overall economy. So it's certainly something to pay attention to. When we look at what's happening in the world, a lot of leverage has built up, and we're starting to see that leverage coming out. So Bitcoin prices were down in here today, and Ethereum prices have pulled back to test the 4,000 level. Now, 4,000 has been a big psychological level for Ethereum. It was the area of previous resistance. It should now offer support. But when we think about the Bitcoin price, it was down $3,300 in here today, and this is a failed break. When the peak was with a downside key reversal, we had follow through about a week later, and we still have a sequence of lower rally highs. Now the price is off the low in here today as it comes down to test that psychological 50,000 level, but ultimately we're going to have to see a significant rebound. Now if the entire fintech sector continues to deteriorate, well then it's going to have a knock-on effect for Bitcoin. And I think it's also relevant to pay attention to the cryptocurrency world because it's where a great deal of interest has been expressed and where lots of people are talking about having a position or wanting to have a position. And the one thing we also know about the cryptocurrency exchanges is that they have been particularly ineffective in processing sale orders. So as we think then about companies like Coinbase, it's another significant fintech company as an exchange for Bitcoin trading, and the price was down in a very dynamic manner over the course of just the last 3 days, where it has fallen from 325 to 260. So coming back into the region of $250, and that offered at least some resistance between about May and September of this year, and it should ideally begin to offer support. We certainly have short-term oversold conditions starting to appear, so we may yet see some of these instruments starting to bounce, but they have a lot of work to do in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And it really is down to what is going to happen with the Federal Reserve. We have the clear potential that the infrastructure sector is going to do better, and that there will be significant investment in recharging stations, in renewable energy infrastructure, and that there will be also investments in regular infrastructure. And all of that will be in an attempt to try and create growth in the aftermath of the credit crisis, and that's likely to be a global phenomenon. Well, if we're moving into a new global infrastructure build, no longer simply focused on China, but potentially becoming a global phenomenon as governments become more activist in terms of dealing with the threat from the climate. Well, then that will be a significant demand driver for resources. But the major resources are going to be copper and lithium. And copper prices remain steady, and the lithium price, or at least the lithium ETF, is now pulling back in here today and potentially going to pull back into the underlying range. When we look at the constituents, again, we have Tesla as this time a 5% constituent. But then we have CATL and BYD. So if we just look at the performance of China's largest battery manufacturer, it has continued to trend higher. So this is also an example of a politically favored sector continuing to do well. And as long as a sector is politically favored in China, well, then it has room to expand on the upside. It's when they fall out of favor that they start to face increasing regulatory oversight. And BYD was among the best performing car companies in 2020, and now it is pausing in the region of the previous peaks. So it's not to say that there haven't been strong performers in China. There have been, but there has been also a very significant correction in the property sector, and we don't have a great deal of evidence to suggest that it's over just yet either. Now, when we think about what's going on in India, well, then they have already seen the beginning of a new credit cycle. So the credit impulse has turned in India, and the Nifty index is beginning to demonstrate some support in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it's been a reasonably similar sized reaction so far. I do think, though, that it's important to pay attention to the not just the local currency, but also to the perspective of an international investor. And because the rupee has been comparatively steady, well, then we're presented with a reasonably similar chart pattern. Of course, there are pockets of problems in the global environment, and Turkey's currency has halved in value in the last 6 months. So the central bank intervened in here this week, and so far they have arrested the decline. It's still holding around the 14 level. When a central bank begins to intervene, well, then generally they get their way, but they don't generally get it immediately, and the market likes to test their resolve. So there's been some testing of that resolve over the last few days, and it's likely that we're probably now in the region of a low. And if the Turkish authorities get the permission to raise interest rates, they will do so, or they will potentially set up a dual interest rate environment. But ultimately, when central banks start to intervene, then that is something that we should pay attention to. And the Turkish ETF is right in the region of the lows. And of course, sometimes we'll see nominal prices where the nominal price of a stock market has accelerated higher. It's when you put it into a constant currency that we can see what the true effect is on the performance of that market, because the ETF is just steady in the region of the lower side of its range, whereas we've had a clear acceleration higher in the nominal price because of the devaluation of the currency. And let me put this into local currencies, and it changes the chart entirely. And I think this is particularly relevant for Brazil, because Brazil is a major commodity producer. And the index in nominal terms, is right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average right now. And that's in local currency terms. In constant currency terms, it's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. Now, the big question is going to be what happens in terms of the currency. So, if the real can hold the lows, well, then that will lend some support to the argument that it's an interesting market from an international investor's perspective, and short-term interest rates have risen considerably in Brazil. The Brazilian market was one of the best performing in the world in the decade up to 2011, and a good part of the reason for that was because of massive iron ore exports. Well, I don't believe that this new bull market is going to be so much about iron ore and quite likely to be more about copper. So there's the potential then that it's going to be the major copper exporters start to fire on the upside because they'll benefit from additional investment. So Southern Copper is a major Peruvian miner, and at least it's listed. The Codelco in Chile is not a listed company, but BHP is a major copper producer in its own right, even if iron ore is its major cost and revenue producer. And the share in US dollar terms is finding support in the region of the upper side of the range, and we're starting to see an additional rebound coming through in the last week for BHP Billiton. Well, I think it's particularly relevant to highlight the kinds of companies that have pulled back already and are demonstrating support, and those that had already surged and are beginning to roll over, because it's looking increasingly likely that we are moving into more of a transition phase. But the reality is that the dollar is the linchpin, and in order to really ignite interest in foreign assets, then the dollar would have to trade lower, and this isn't what I was looking for. The Bloomberg Dollar Index has got renminbi in it and it's got Indian rupees, so it's not as euro focused, but it is trending higher. And as long as it's trending higher, well, then that's going to certainly continue to focus attention on US assets. If we are moving into more of a corrective phase and these indices, excuse me, like the S&P 500 or the Nasdaq or the Russell 2000, if they fail and pull down through the ranges, well, then that will hold out the prospect of a 10%, maybe even a 20% pullback and a lengthier, more volatile period of consolidation. And then it will be down to just how much pain in the stock market will the Federal Reserve tolerate. Because if they are not willing to tolerate a 20% pullback, well, then we'll get a sharp rebound and prices will surge back to new highs. And we'll get another potentially year or two of continued trending. Ultimately, the yield curve spread will invert, and that will create a recession, and it's still a reliable lead indicator for recessions. But there's nothing suggesting that we have an imminent yield curve inversion. So this is looking more like a correction rather than a top of meaningful import. But certainly, there is the potential for additional downside if we break down out of these ranges. And the fact that bond yields are contracting is pricing in deflation. So lots of people have been worried about inflation, and generally speaking, in an inflationary environment, one would anticipate that bond yields would rise. But the interest rate and liquidity sensitivity of the market is being reflected in the bond yields starting to come back down, because any threat to the liquidity environment has a significant knock-on effect on the economy. So it is the right decision to buy bonds in as a hedge against that, which is helping the yields to contract. If we're not imminently going to have a recession, then this just looks like a correction, and it means that there will be buying opportunities. And there is the potential that what we're also looking at is that some of the most interest rate sensitive portions of the market have been grossly overvalued, and they might come back a lot more than 10%, and that we probably need a reordering of risk within the market to prepare us for the next leg of a bull, but that the champions of performance during the pandemic, they're, I think, unlikely to continue to lead us on the upside. I know I've got a bugbear about Zoom video communications, and I just haven't been on even one call where I didn't find it annoying, and the share continues to pull back in a violent manner. And it's been a liquidity-fueled ride for the economy, for the share. And Peloton's another example of that. Their treadmills are killing children. So that's eventually going to drive the company into bankruptcy. Then thinking about the potential for significant liability, Bayer has pulled back in a very violent manner over the course of November, and it's beginning to steady in the region of 44 euro. And they may be coming towards the end of the Roundup litigation they inherited from Monsanto. And the share has been trending downwards for 6 years, and it's steadying in the region of 40 euro. And we're entering a period of time when there's going to be a lot of demand for food. And the Agricultural Commodity Futures Fund remains in a bullish environment overall. Coffee prices were quite strong in here today, and wheat prices have been pulling back, and soybeans have been somewhat steadier. And by and large, the food price has been rising for most of this year, and this is something that's also contributing to inflationary pressures. Of course, if oil prices range rather than trend, that should help to mitigate some of the problems. And if the supply chain bottlenecks seem to ease, and I suspect that that will start to occur next year, well, then that would also ease some of the burden on food prices. But certainly, coffee prices continue to trend higher. If we are moving into more of a corrective phase, then the kinds of sectors that bottom early will be a very good indicator of what will be the sectors that will lead us in the next phase of this bull market. And I think that is something that we can all look forward to. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.